Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
My name is Craig Pakla, C-R-A-I-G, P as in Paul, A, K-K-A-L-A.
Right, Mr. Saunders, the witness is yours.
Officer, how
are you employed?
I'm a detective with the City of Green Bay Police Department.
And how long have you been employed in law enforcement?
Approximately 30 years.
And is the entirety of that time with the Green Bay Police Department?
No, it is not.
You have prior law enforcement experience in a different jurisdiction?
I was a police officer in the state of Michigan.
Okay. How long have you been with the Green Bay Police Department?
Approximately 24 years.
In your current assignment as a detective, how long has that been for?
Approximately 8 years.
And I want to ask you about February 23rd of 2022. Do you recall if you were working in that capacity on that date?
I was.
And were you called in to assist in an apparent homicide investigation on that day?
I was.
To where were you dispatched to, or where did you respond to?
My initial response was to the Green Bay Police Department at 307 South Adams in Green Bay.
And what did you do when you got to the police station?
When I arrived at the station, I was soon thereafter asked to respond to 2353 Eastman Avenue to assist officers who weren't seen there.
What was the reason you were dispatched to the Eastman Avenue residence?
Shortly before my arrival at the Green Bay Police Department, and I was contacted at approximately 4:45 in the morning. Shortly before my arrival there, I was advised that they located the suspect involved in the incident and also a vehicle that she was driving at that address.
And when you got to the Eastman Avenue address, what did you do?
When I first arrived at the address, I made contact with two different supervisors, one of which was Sergeant Jeff Schilling, and the second one was Lieutenant Tom Buckman, at which time they informed me of the status of the scene.
When you arrived, had the area sort of already been secured by other officers?
Yes, it had.
And can you describe how it was secured?
Officers, prior to my arrival, they noted some red substance in the snow along a sidewalk trail, and that area had some cones by it, or they're soon about to put cones by it. The door, entrance door to the apartment complex itself, and then within the complex common hallway, they had evidence tape securing that area.
And were some officers also providing security or monitoring of the crime scene to see who was entering and leaving?
There were.
What did you do, I guess, after speaking with those initial supervisors who were on scene?
After I spoke to the officers and supervisors that were present, I determined that we would need a search warrant to proceed with the search of the interior of the apartment, which was apartment number one. I took note of the description of the building and area to be searched, including the apartment. I also took some preliminary pictures of the exterior of the building, including the suspect vehicle, and the entranceway to the apartment, which is number one.
And I want to ask you about some of those pictures. Been marked exhibit 80. Do you recognize that exhibit?
I do.
What is that?
That is a picture of the side of the apartment complex as previously described. That is the north side of the apartment complex. The main entrance to the apartment 2353 to the common area is on the right side of the picture. That has some evidence tape in front of it. And that is a picture of three vehicles parked in a southbound direction. And I was informed that the middle vehicle, which is a van, was that in which the suspect arrived to the scene in.
And Exhibit 80, as you're looking at it, does that appear to fairly and accurately depict that area and those vehicles as you encountered them when you arrived on scene?
That is correct. It does. Okay.
And that's a photograph that you took as well?
I did.
Indicated you were waiting for a warrant to authorize the search of the inside of the apartment. Is that right?
That is correct.
Was one then obtained?
I did obtain a warrant.
Okay. And did you then participate in the search of that Eastman Avenue apartment?
I did.
And what apartment number was the subject of the search?
Number one.
All right. And I guess was that reported to be the apartment where Mr. Business and Mr. Tomes were residing?
That is correct.
And I guess, what was, generally your role in searching the apartment?
My role in searching the apartment was to look to evidence or look in areas where evidence that were listed in the warrant may be found. I did receive information of the type of crime that was committed at a prior address. So I listed those items which would be used in that particular crime, and we searched the apartment for those type of items.
In the course of your occupation, have you received training in searching areas such as apartments for items of evidence?
I have.
And have you received training in collecting physical evidence such as DNA and blood and other substances?
I have.
And in the course of your 30 years in law enforcement, is that something you've done in the past?
Yes, I have.
In this case, when you were sort of searching the residence, were you wearing any special attire?
I was.
Can you describe what that was?
I believe I had on some protective wear on my feet, but I also wore rubber gloves at any time I handled or collected evidence, especially that containing DNA.
The steps you took were consistent with your training and experience?
Yes.
All right. So I want to then show you what's been marked. Detective, could you describe the inside of apartment number one at 2353 Eastman Avenue for us?
Apartment number one at 2353 Eastman is a single-bedroom apartment. Entrance to the apartment is located on the east side of the hallway, the common entrance. As you walk in, there's a kitchen to your right, which is kind of an open kind of concept type kitchen. To your left is a bedroom, to your left is the living room. The living room has a window showing the parking lot, which was indicated in this picture. As you proceed east, there is a bedroom located on the furthest east side of the room in the north corner, and there's a bathroom to the right of that bedroom.
I'm going to show you exhibits 91 through 94. I'll ask you to look through those and ask if you recognize those exhibits.
I do recognize those exhibits.
What are those?
Those are photographs I took of various locations within the bedroom as described in that apartment.
And do those appear to be consistent with the scene you encountered on February 23rd of 2022 on Eastman Avenue?
Yes, they do.
I'd move those exhibits, Your Honor.
Any objection?
No objection, subject to cross.
91 through 94 will be received.
So then, Judge, I'd also ask permission to publish those exhibits.
No objection. All right, those can be published.
All right, so Detective, are we looking at Exhibit 91 projected?
Yes, you are looking at Exhibit 91.
All right, and what does 91 depict?
I'm sorry?
Sorry, what does 91 depict?
91 depicts the bed located in the bedroom of apartment number 1 at 2353 Eastman Avenue.
Okay, and then Exhibit 92, what does that depict?
That depicts a cell phone that was on the bed at the time I took the picture.
And is that consistent with the area that you recovered that cell phone from?
It is.
For instance, it wasn't moved from its location, to your knowledge, prior to taking this photograph?
That is correct. It was not.
And then did you collect that cellular device as part of your evidence collection in this case?
Yes, I did.
I also then want to move then to 93, I think. 93, is this what we're looking at?
Yes.
And what does 93 depict?
93 is a light switch for that bedroom as described. That light switch is located on a west wall. As you walk into the bedroom, it'd be to the left or to the north.
And it's the same bedroom, and I guess the sole bedroom in that apartment that we looked at earlier?
That is correct.
All right. And then Exhibit 94, what does this depict?
Exhibit 94 is a close-up of image 93 of the light switch. And I also have scale indicators on there showing the location where I took the picture or where it's located.
Thank you. So then with respect to Exhibit 94 here, did you conduct any further processing of that area?
I did. I collected a DNA sample, or I collected a swab of a potential DNA sample of the red substance on that light switch.
And how did you collect that DNA sample?
I collected that by way of using a swab, sterile swab, in a prepackaged container, so to speak. For this particular swab, because it was dry, I added distilled water to the end of that cotton swab, and then I simply rubbed the swab on there. And then I packaged that swab and sealed it at the scene.
Okay. And the swab that you collected and the procedure you just described, is that how you're trained to do it?
I am.
Okay. What did you do with that swab once you were completed with the processing?
When the completion of that particular swab, it was packaged and sealed. All items of evidence were returned to the Green Bay Police Department, where they are submitted into our evidence department, a secure property locker.
And I do want to just go back a little bit. I'm going to go to, I believe this is Exhibit 92. Sorry to jump around on you.
You're fine.
Is this Exhibit 92?
It is.
You indicated that phone was collected by yourself. Is that right?
That is correct.
When you enter an item of evidence such as this into evidence, I guess, does it get assigned a unique identifier of some kind?
When we enter an item of evidence, we create a number showing who collected it or who processed it into evidence, yes.
Okay. And was that done, to your knowledge, for this phone?
Yes.
And do you recall what the number was offhand?
No, I won't be able to recall that.
Okay. Are there a lot of numbers that you're keeping in your head with respect to the exhibits you collected?
That is correct.
Would you have documented that or memorialized that in your details?
I would have, yes.
Okay. Would that assist you in refreshing your memory and what the exhibit number for that item is?
It would.
I'm going to show you what's been marked. Exhibit 95. Do you recognize Exhibit 95?
Exhibit 95 are my details related to this case and the search of that apartment.
And I'd ask if you could review the details, particularly the top of page 2, and then I'll ask if that helped refresh your recollection as to that item that exhibit number?
It does refresh my memory.
Okay, and then what is the item number of that cellular device?
That cellular device that was collected, which was on the bed, is evidence number 22-209-240-370-004.
So those last six numbers, 370-004, what do those signify?
370 is my personal computer number that's associated to our reporting system. 004 is merely a item that I collected associated with my computer number, and that is just a sequential order that they're placed in as I put these items into evidence. So that was the fourth item that I categorized.
Thank you, Detective. I have nothing further.
Cross-examination, Mr. Fralick.
Thank you, Detective Pakula. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Sir, you were contacted by your lieutenant, Lieutenant Goon, on February 23rd of 2022 to come into the station. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Regarding an apparent homicide, correct?
Yes, sir.
And the information that you received was that a mother discovered something in a bucket in her basement, correct?
That is correct.
There are different officers or investigators or detectives already involved, correct?
Yes, sir.
That being Detective Like, Detective Groff, Detective Kempf, correct?
That is correct.
And you gained information that someone by the name of Stephen Hendricks had called Brown County Dispatch at about 3:25 a.m. to report this. Is that fair?
That is fair.
And then while en route to the Green Bay Police Department, you heard other officers calling out with a need to possibly go to 2353 Eastman Avenue. Is that fair?
That is fair.
So when you got to the station, you were briefed by Lieutenant Bagoon, correct?
He was one of them, yes.
And were you told to go over to Eastman Avenue?
Yes, sir.
And so did you go there by yourself?
I did.
Okay, and you met up with other detectives, correct?
At the scene at that time, I was the only detective at the scene.
Okay. There are other officers there, correct?
Yes, sir.
Officer Garth Russell was there?
I don't recall Garth Russell being there.
Okay. Do you know who else was there?
The two that I made contact with were Sergeant Jeff Schilling and Lieutenant Buckman, Tom Buckman.
And what time did you get to the Eastman Avenue apartment complex?
I don't know the exact time, but it was after 4:45 and still in the hours of darkness during that day.
All right. There's snow on the ground, correct?
There was.
It's cold outside, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you made your way up to the front door of the apartment complex, correct?
I did.
Had individuals already been arrested by the time you got there?
They had, yes.
Okay. All right. when you walked up, did you see crime scene tape at all?
I did see tape in the doorway entrance, yes.
Okay. Later, did you see crime scene tape around the Town and Country minivan?
I don't recall that.
Okay. All right. And then your plan was basically to go into apartment number one at this apartment complex to conduct a search, right?
That is correct.
And did you have a search warrant at the time?
I did.
Okay. And so then you walked into the unit, correct?
Following the search warrant, yes.
Okay. And the bedroom and living room windows face the parking lot, is that correct?
The living room window for sure does face the parking lot. I'm uncertain on the bedroom window.
Were any individuals inside of apartment number one?
No.
And so you walked around and started looking for things, correct?
I began my search, correct.
You searched the living room and the kitchen?
I searched the bedroom area.
Okay. There's one bedroom there, correct?
Correct.
In the bedroom area, did you find any body parts or human remains?
No, not outright, no.
Okay. Did you find anything of evidentiary value in that bedroom?
I believe I collected items of evidentiary value, yes.
What did you collect? A telephone?
I collected two cell phones.
Okay. Where were the cell phones?
Where are they now?
No, where were they?
Oh, one was depicted on the bed in one of the images, and the second one was in a purse.
Okay. Exhibit 91, that photograph depicts a bed, correct?
Yes, it does.
And there's a phone on the bed, correct?
Yes.
Bed's got a gray comforter on it, correct?
It does.
And there's a phone cord there?
Correct.
And there's some other device. I don't know if that's a fan or something else. Is that true?
Correct.
Okay. And then Exhibit 92 is just basically a close-up picture of the comforter, correct?
Correct.
Exhibit 93 is a light switch, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that light switch is on the wall in the bedroom of Unit 1 at 2353 Eastman Avenue?
That is correct.
That light switch is cracked, correct?
It is cracked.
And there's smear marks on it, correct?
Yes, I would describe those as smear marks.
You looked at those smear marks. Was that an issue for you? Like, as far as were you concerned that about what that was?
I was concerned due to the marks and the coloration. I felt it was a value for evidence to collect that, yes.
And did you collect it then?
I did.
Okay. You had no contact with Taylor Shabusiness on this particular date, correct?
No, sir, I did not.
All the contact with Ms. Shabusiness was with Detective Groff and Detective Kempf, correct?
From the best of my knowledge, yes.
You never talked to her at all, correct?
No, sir.
You never saw anybody in the gold Town and Country minivan that was parked, correct?
No, sir.
You saw, that's true, right?
Yes, sir.
You never saw any people inside the van when you walked up or when you left, fair?
Fair, I did not.
And you never saw that gold Town and Country minivan move at all, correct?
No, I did not.
How long were you at the scene at Eastman Avenue?
I was at the scene initially for approximately an hour. Then I left to complete the search warrant and returned. And then I was at the scene for several hours to complete the search.
And this apartment complex, is it called Meadowview East Apartments?
I believe that's the name of that section, yes.
And the vehicles, they park basically in a line next to each other. Is that fair?
That is fair.
In front of that, there's a sidewalk, correct?
There is.
And the police tape was around just the gold minivan, or was it around the vehicle on either side of the minivan?
I don't recall the police tape organizational or if there was police tape around the minivan itself.
Okay. At some point in time, was it such that a gentleman, maybe part of the facility or whatnot, but he was shoveling, and he continued to shovel down the sidewalk underneath the police tape into the crime scene. Did that happen?
I recall a person shoveling, but as I said, I left prior to, I was gone from the scene, so I don't know where he shoveled to or if he made it to the crime scene area.
Whose responsibility was it to protect and preserve the crime scene and where the yellow police tape was located?
Lieutenant Buckman and or Sergeant Schilling would have assigned a patrol officer in uniform and or a squad car to sit and watch that scene.
Okay. In preparing for trial and reviewing all the records, you did review most of the police reports, correct?
I reviewed my police reports.
Okay. Did you review other officers or other detectives' reports?
I did not.
Okay. But did you come to find out that that really did happen, that someone shoveled on the sidewalk into the crime scene underneath the police tape?
I observed upon my arrival back there was somebody shoveling, but they were a distance away. So as far as that explanation of what you're describing, I wasn't aware of that.
Okay. If I told you that that happened, would you be shocked?
Objection. Calls for speculation.
I'll withdraw.
Thank you.
Okay, questions withdrawn.
So when you got there, you took pictures of the doorway to the apartment, correct?
The doorway is depicted in the picture, correct?
Did you dust for prints on the minivan at all?
I did not.
You collected some additional DNA swabs in two different areas of the apartment. Is that fair?
One different area, I believe.
If your report says two different areas, would that be accurate?
It would be.
Okay. And as you were searching the apartment, did you note a red substance on the hallway wall leading from the living room to Ms. Shabizis's bedroom and the bathroom?
Yes, sir, I did.
And then at some point, did you determine that you were not going to be concerned about that?
I collected that in the same manner as I did the other item of DNA evidence. However, I did indicate in my report that it was it did not appear to be a biological substance.
Okay. How did you determine that it was not a biological substance?
Because under normal circumstances, and when I say normal, it's just based on my past experience, when you try to collect a sample and you add distilled water, which is the proper protocol to rehydrate something, if that does not come off very easily, it could be anything from paint to nail polish or something of that nature. And this did not come off the wall as it should have if it was a substance of DNA interest.
In the bedroom, did you find anything else that was concerning?
I collected another item of evidence in the bedroom, yes.
What was it?
I collected some syringes that appeared to be somewhat melted, for lack of better terms, together.
Okay. Nothing further.
Redirect.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank
you're
you.
Excused. You're welcome. State's next witness.
State calls Nate Kalinske.
Okay, sir, if you want to step right up over here, and before you have a seat, if you could turn and face her and raise your right hand, she'll place you under oath.
You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter now before the court, so help you God.
I do.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
Nathan R. Kalinske, last name is K-O-L-I-N-S-K-I.
Okay, then Mr. Saunders, the witness is yours.
Can you tell us how you're employed?
I am a evidence tech with the Green Bay Police Department.
All right, what do you do as an evidence tech?
So our job is to, once the officers package and seal the evidence, they hand it over to us, and our job is to keep it safe and secure, basically until the case is over.
Okay, and how long have you been employed in that capacity as an evidence tech?
About 6.5 years.
All right. In addition to maintaining custody of items, is it also the case that you're responsible for transmitting certain items to the Wisconsin State Crime Lab?
Crime Lab, yes.
And that's for, I guess, further testing by them?
Yes. Yep. We send it out to the crime labs, and then the crime lab also mails it back to us. We receive the packages back.
And how is it that items are sent to the Wisconsin State Crime Lab?
They are either mailed, or in certain cases, we will drive them down and we do a physical hand drop off with the crime lab.
Is there any documentation that memorializes that transmittal?
We have a form on our end that we fill out, and then the crime lab has like a receipt form that says everything that they received and the date they got it in.
Can I show you exhibits 96? Do you recognize that?
Yes, this is a transmittal, looks like to. It's all three, so it's a transmittal to one of the state crime labs.
Okay. And is that a form that sort of would bear indicia that you were sort of involved in the transmittal of these items?
Yes, correct.
And what is that?
So we have here listing. Do you want me to read them off or just give the numbers?
Well, first I'll ask, is there any indication that you signed it or notated on it?
Looks like has my name on the bottom of it, and then it went through, and these look like there's little checkoff on the side of the form. We do that just to make note of every one that we have, just to ensure we are bringing everything down.
And is that consistent with your practice, just to make sure you've transmitted all the items you're supposed to?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, so it's a form you believe you kind of filled out as well here?
Measure twice, cut once kind of thing, yes.
Sure. And then what was the... agency case number associated with this transmittal?
So that is going to be agency case 22-209240.
Okay. And is that, I guess, with respect to the case you're subpoenaed here for today?
That is correct.
All right. Thank you. I'd move 94.
Any objection?
No.
That'll be received.
What items of evidence did you transmit to the Wisconsin State Crime Lab in this case?
So this one, we have... A buckle swab taken from Taylor Shabusiness, swabs taken from the right hand of Taylor, swab taken from the left hand of Taylor, oral swab from Shad Therion that was taken at the autopsy, a swab of the blade of exhibit 543033, swab of red substance inside exhibit 543072, swab of red substance on light switch from suspect's bedroom, black sweatpants with dried blood on it, a penile swab, and swab of exhibit 543038.
Based on your recollection and your review of this exhibit, are those items that you would have been transmitting to the crime lab?
Correct, yes.
Okay. And are you aware of how you transmitted those items to the crime lab?
I believe for this one, they were dropped off. We drove down and the Madison lab has different rooms. You can go in and like hand over evidence and then they'll give you the receipt right away that you dropped them off.
Okay. So in this instance, you personally delivered them to the crime
lab? Yep, we drove them down.
When you are... transmitting items, you know, in this instance personally. If there's an issue with transport, if there's a disruption of the evidence, is that somehow noted?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And was that done in this case?
No, it was not.
Okay. So there's no belief in your part that any of the items were tampered with or manipulated in any way?
No.
Apart from the transmitting, I think you mentioned earlier one of your responsibilities is to oversee the storage of evidence in the police station itself. Is that
yes.
right? And can you describe the Green Bay Police Department's evidence room for us?
So we have several rooms that are throughout the basement, and all the rooms are generally the same. They're all locked rooms. They have an alarm system, a keypad entry system, and then they have cameras and motion sensors. So there are only, I believe, 5 people inside the department, including myself, that have access to these rooms. It's a very tight control. Our belief is that the fewer people that can get in there, the more secure the evidence is.
So I guess, is it the case that any member of the Green Bay Police Department can just go in the evidence room?
No.
Okay. Is that something that either yourself or your colleague would be present for or supervise?
Yes. If there's anybody outside of the 5 of us that wants to be in there, we have to escort them in the rooms, yes.
Thank you, sir. I have nothing further.
Cross-examination, Mr. Frelick.
Do I address you as Mr. Kalinske or Evidence Tech Kalinske?
Mr.'s fine.
Okay. So these items were transmitted down to Madison by who?
That would be, I believe, myself. And then there are normally two of us that go with. Sometimes it's a light duty officer. Sometimes it's my coworker, Gene. Depends on who's free at the time.
Okay. And then do you have to park and then physically carry these items into the state crime lab? Or how does that work?
Correct. There's a parking right across the street from the door. You walk inside, walk upstairs, and they go in these little large closet-sized rooms where they're there with the little desk. You hand them over one by one. They receive them, and then you get a paper receipt from them with everything that they received. It's basically their transfer of custody from us to them.
Okay. Kind of like that library. You drop off the book.
Similar to it. We just don't lose contact with it. There's no slot or anything where they are the entire time until we hand it to them.
And then did you get your receipt right away?
Yes.
And then after the lab analysts did their testing, how did you get these items back?
We either pick them up in person if we're there for some other business, or they mail them back to us.
Do you know if these items got mailed back to you?
I'm not sure. Okay. The paperwork would say it. I can't remember off the top of my head how they got back to the department.
Okay. Any, you've been an evidence technician for 6.5 years. You've got a lot of training and experience, correct?
Yes.
You know how to package items. You know how to make sure they're safe and secure, correct?
Yes.
You follow certain procedures when you cut the bag open and you have to be careful, correct?
Correct, yes.
Any issues at all with setting the materials down or getting it back?
No, none that I'm aware of.
All right. Nothing further. Thank you.
Redirect?
No, thank you.
Thank you, sir. You can step down. State's next witness.
State calls Gene Rakers.
I have a hand up from a juror.
All right, no problem. Sorry.
Okay, ma'am, just step right up over here. And then before you have a seat, if you could turn and face her and raise your right hand, she'll place you under oath.
You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter, now before the court, so help you God. Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
My name is Jean Rakers.
Okay, Mr. Saunders, the witness is yours.
All right, how are you employed?
I am currently employed as an evidence technician with the Green Bay Police Department.
And how long have you been employed in that capacity?
For the past 4 years.
And is one of your colleagues Mr. Kalinske, who we just saw?
Yes.
All right. You work in the same role as him?
Yes, I do.
Do you have the same job responsibilities?
Yes.
All right. I want to ask you about Green Bay PD case number 22-209240. Is that a case that you remember being involved in?
Yes.
All right. And I want to show you what's previously been marked exhibit number 90. Do you recognize exhibit 90?
Yes, I do.
What is that?
This is a transmission of evidence from the Wisconsin State Crime Lab in Madison to the Green Bay Police Department.
And I guess what are those documents used for?
It itemizes the evidence that is sent between agencies. So in this instance, these are items that were returned to the Green Bay Police Department from the State Crime Lab in Madison.
And does the form indicate which items were returned to your department?
Yes, it's the State Crime Lab assigns a letter to each piece of evidence that's designated on the form. And then our evidence exhibit number is also stated on the form.
Okay. And Does the form indicate who would have been the person taking receipt of those items of evidence with the Green Bay Police Department?
Yes, my name is signed on the bottom, and I indicate that I received it on April 22nd of 2022.
And so that's it's your belief then in reviewing that document that you received those items of evidence?
Yes.
Okay. I'd move 95.
The objection, Mr. Fraley?
No.
Right. That'll be received.
And I have nothing further.
Cross-examination.
Can I see that exhibit?
Sure. All right.
Ms. Rikers, you've been working for the Green Bay Police Department for 4 years as a evidence technician, correct?
That's correct.
And you worked with evidence tech Nathan Kalinske?
Yes.
You work in tandem, correct?
That's correct.
Your role in this particular case was to send items or receive items or both?
In this instance, I received the items that the crime lab sent. When they're delivered, I personally receive the box that they're delivered in, and I ensure that the seals are all intact. Then I open the box and verify that the items on the list on the transmittal are indeed the items I'm receiving back.
And this exhibit number 90
yes.
indicates that you received all of these items back on April 22nd of 2022, correct?
That's correct.
These items were sent from the state crime lab on April 21st of 2022 by Olivia Sassman?
Yes, the state crime lab in Madison.
Do you know why it took a day for you to get these items back?
Yes, that's generally the turnaround time. They're sent on one day, we receive them the next day. And again, the boxes that we received are sealed. We verify that the seals are intact before we open it and verify the contents of them.
Who transported these items from Madison back to the Green Bay Police Department?
The crime lab utilizes speedy delivery.
When these items came to the Green Bay Police Department on April 22nd of 2022, did you have to meet them at the front?
Yes, they call me up and I meet the delivery driver at the door.
And then you sign the release at that time?
That's correct.
And
I sign their little machine that they have, indicating that I'm receiving it from them. I don't sign this transmittal form until I've gone through and verified that all the items on their list are indeed the items that we've received.
And on this form, there's a cross off. It's got evidence tech Nathan Kalinske on there, correct?
Yes.
And then your name is stamped on there, is that right?
Yes.
Is that right?
Okay. That's just their form. They just have Nathan's name on there as a form. So if I'm the one receiving it, then I'm the one signing it and stamping it.
Okay. And then you keep this in your records?
That's correct.
Okay. Nothing further. Thank you.
Redirect?
No, thank you.
Ma'am, before you step down, my clerk and I are running the numbers, and that can't be 95. What number?
This is Exhibit 90,
okay. 90. You asked for 95 to be admitted. This is 90, but it's already been admitted. So I just want to make sure we're all clear on the numbers, okay?
I wrote 90 down.
Sorry.
I did write 90 down.
Okay, very good. You can step down. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next witness, then.
State calls Kendall Donelski.
If you want to just step up right over here, and before you have a seat, if you could turn and face her and raise your right hand, she'll place you under oath.
You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter, not before the court, so help you God.
I do.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
Kendall Donelski.
Okay, then, Mr. Lizay, the witness is yours.
Ms. Donelski, can you state for the record how you are employed?
I'm a certified forensic computer examiner with the Green Bay Police Department.
And what is a certified computer forensic examiner?
I basically take all digital devices that come through the police department and extract and sometimes analyze that data.
How long have you been employed in that capacity at the Green Bay Police Department?
Almost 7 years.
Do you have any sort of educational background or training that is related to that position?
I do, yes. Training and certifications are very important for this position to keep up with the ever-changing technology. So a couple of the more valuable ones that I've had over the past couple of years, I'm certified through IASIS, which is the International Association of Computer Investigative Specialists, as a certified forensic computer examiner and a certified mobile device examiner. I'm also certified through SANS as a GFCE, which is another crucial training and program that we have to go through. I'm also certified through Cellebrite as a Cellebrite certified mobile examiner. And I'm also certified through Magnet as a Magnet certified forensic examiner. And lastly, I'm certified through ACE as an Access Data certified examiner.
Can you just describe for the jury generally what your process is when you are analyzing, not analyzing actually, the download of a device?
Yes, so I get the device in, and depending on the make and model of that device, it has to be placed into certain settings for extraction so that it can make a connection and communication with my computer. So I get the phone in the correct settings, and then I hook it up to an adapter, and then from there I use a set of software to perform the extraction. Once that extraction is complete, I then open it up in a readable program that I then can get out to officers and detectives to go through that data.
And is it typical that you yourself will review the data on the phone, or is your typical practice that you will conduct the forensic download of the device and then provide it to another party to review?
It is typical. I perform the extraction, view some of the data to verify things parsed correctly, and then I usually pass that data on to officers or detectives.
Can you estimate approximately how many times per year you conduct a forensic download of a device?
I perform...
Overruled. Because there's all different kinds of cases. I mean, this is a homicide case, but there's many cases out there.
Overruled. You can answer the question.
Thank you. I perform about 600 phone extractions a year.
Have you performed roughly that many phone extractions over the course of your seven-year career at the Green Bay Police Department?
It increases every year, but roughly, yes.
Were you asked to assist in the investigation of a homicide that occurred at 829 Stony Brook in around February 22nd and 23rd of 2022?
I was, yes.
And who asked you to assist with analyzing devices in that case?
Multiple detectives. For this one, I believe Detective Graff and Detective Luberta.
And do you recall specifically how many devices you analyzed and, or how many devices you downloaded on this case?
I would say 10 or more.
And was one of the devices that you were asked to download a device that was attributed as belonging to Taylor Shabusiness?
Yes.
When you conduct a forensic download of a phone, do you use any paperwork to outline the work that you did with respect to that particular device?
I do, yes.
What is that called?
For every phone or computer that comes through my office, I create a cell phone or computer analysis worksheet. Yes, this is a cell phone analysis worksheet that I completed for exhibit number 370004.
That exhibit number, that 37004, where does that number come from?
That comes from evidence, so every case number is assigned to a case, and then the evidence within that case gets an exhibit or evidence number.
So when an officer collects an item of evidence, they assign it that number?
Correct.
And then that is the piece of evidence that was assigned to you for download?
It was, yes.
Does the cell phone analysis worksheet for that particular piece of evidence, does it outline the process that you used to conduct the forensic download?
It does, yes.
And could you describe for the jury what process you used in this case?
Yes. So for this particular phone, I put the phone in the correct settings for extraction where it could communicate with my computer. From there, I hooked it up to the Cellebrite 4PC adapter, and then I used the Cellebrite 4PC extraction software to perform that extraction. Once that extraction completes successfully, I bring that into Cellebrite Physical Analyzer, which is that software program that parses the data for me.
Are you able to determine when you do an extraction whether or not the extraction was successful?
I am, yes.
How do you do that?
I can compare the data on the phone after the extraction completes successfully to verify that the data on the phone is matching the data in the extraction, and also the program will show that the extraction completed successfully, or it would indicate if it did fail.
So for this particular device, in addition to doing the extraction and looking at the information on the extraction, are you able to manually manipulate the phone itself?
Yes.
So that's how you're able to confirm that the data is consistent on the device and on the extraction?
Correct. That is always done after an extraction to make sure not to manipulate any data before an extraction.
In addition to conducting the extraction, did you do other things? After the extraction was done, did you do additional manipulation of the device itself to obtain any evidence from the device?
Yes. After that extraction completed successfully, I manually navigated the phone and took additional screen captures using that same set of software.
And what is the purpose of doing those screen captures?
With certain types of extractions, some applications or data might not always be extracted or parsed correctly. For example, Google Photos might not always be extracted or parsed with that type of extraction I was able to get from this phone. So then I go on after that extraction completed successfully and manually navigate the phone and then take screenshots of those certain applications that were not included in the original extraction.
And for this particular device, did you then conduct a closer analysis of the content of the extraction, or was that tasked to another person?
I went through and verified that the data was parsed correctly and that everything that officers and detectives might need were captured with the screen captures, but after that, that data was passed on to detectives.
You know specifically which detective was tasked with viewing the report from the extraction of this device?
Detective Luberta.
And you mentioned that certain data may not be captured by the extraction. Can you explain why that might be the case?
So certain types of extractions can extract different things. So there's different levels of extractions. For this one, I was able to get a full file system, which will capture a lot of application data, but it isn't a full physical extraction, which captures a bit-by-bit copy identical of the flash memory on that phone. So basically, everything that's on that phone would get captured. So for this instance, it did not parse the Google Photos, the Google Chrome history, or some recent Facebook Messenger chats. So I went through and captured screenshots of those.
In addition to capturing screenshots, did you advise Detective Luberta in any way about some things that she could do to obtain additional data that's relevant to that device?
I did, yes. So when manually going through a phone, the phone stays in airplane mode. So that means that I'm not connecting to the network and no incoming text messages are coming in, no incoming chats, things like that. I'm not connecting to the network or internet. So I can only sometimes see a limited amount of data when I'm manually navigating. So I can always tell them, like for instance, Google Photos, I could only get to a certain date without being connected to the network. So then I would say, maybe it would be a good idea to get a Google search warrant for that additional data that I might not be able to see on the phone.
What sorts of things might be captured on a Google search warrant that aren't necessarily readily available on the device?
More additional photos, Google searches, location data.
And do you know, does Google also store things in the cloud that might not be physically on the device?
It does, yes.
Do you know if Detective Luberta actually then did subsequently make a request to Google for the information that would have been related to this device?
She did, yes.
And did you have any further contact with Detective Luberta about that?
I did, yes. She got that Google return in a zip file from her search warrant that she created for that. And then from there on, she wanted me to put it in a more readable format for her. So basically, I took that zip file that she got from Google and just ingested it back into Cellebrite Physical Analyzer, where it puts it in a readable, easier format that they're more comfortable with going through.
And the process that you utilize to take that zip file from Google and put it on the UFED reader, is that something that you're trained in and you do in the regular course of your duties?
Yes.
And were you comfortable that when you took the data from Google and put it into that format that everything performed correctly in this instance?
Yes.
And again, did you do the analysis then once it was placed into that more readable format, or is that something tasked to Detective Liberta as well?
Passed on to Detective Liberta.
When you extract data from a device, does the device tell you what date that particular photographs, for example, are taken? Or is that information always accurate when you put it into the UFED reader program?
It would be accurate, yes.
Are there instances in which you manipulating the device or taking it off on that date, the date that you manipulate the phone would also capture?
It could update some dates and times, yes.
No further questions at this time.
Cross-examination, Mr. Fraley.
Thank you. Ms. Donelski, good afternoon.
Hello.
So your role was basically to extract data off of a cell phone?
Correct.
Do you know who the cell phone belonged to?
This particular cell phone belonged to Taylor Shabusiness.
And you only looked at and examined one phone, correct?
I extracted multiple phones, but I didn't go through every single extraction.
Your testimony and Exhibit 91 deal with this phone that you're talking about belonging to Taylor Shabusiness, correct?
I believe this, is this 90, Exhibit 97 or 91?
It's 97.
97, okay. So basically, you were looking to extract data off that phone for you to turn over to Detective Jenna Liberta, correct?
Yes.
You were looking for searches, correct?
A magnitude of things, cell records, okay, call logs.
Okay, let me just ask. I just want to ask you. Were you looking for searches, like what this person was looking for on the cell phone?
That would be included, yes.
Okay. And then you were looking for photos, correct?
Correct.
You were looking for iCloud photos, correct?
Well, in airplane mode, correct.
Okay. And then you were looking to see a GPS location to see where this phone had been, correct?
You can check the Google Maps on the phone, but you cannot check the cloud when you're not connected to that network.
Okay. And cell phones oftentimes have GPS, so if like you want to know where your teenage kid is, you could put that on your phone and you can track where they are, correct?
Correct. Sometimes, yes.
Is that what you were looking for?
I was looking most likely for recent Google searches for the Google Maps application.
Okay. And you had a search warrant for this phone, correct?
Correct.
What was the condition of the phone? Was it damaged at all? Did it have a cracked screen?
The phone appeared to be in, I said, okay condition with an unknown substance on the front screen.
Okay.
But otherwise in working condition.
It was in working condition?
Yes.
Any issues with the charge or anything like that?
No.
Any problems with the extraction at all?
No.
With regards to doing the extraction, is it such that sometimes the date might be off or the time might be off?
Usually the dates are accurate when they're set for the correct date and time, UTC minus 6 or 5, depending on the time zone we're in. That's adjusted in the program.
Okay. And the program that you use was Cellebrite?
Correct.
After you, When you get the data, then do you put it on a separate zip drive or something, or what, how do you do that?
It goes on a shared drive that all detectives can access.
Okay. On the FRED computer?
No, that is. These are not performed on the FRED computer.
Okay. So how would Detective Liberta then access this information?
So the original extraction is saved on a Synology that only I have access to in my office, and then that's where the original dump goes in the extraction. And then that UFDR file that I create from that Cellebrite physical analyzer software, then I can send that to a shared drive that all detectives have access to. So that would be where Detective Liberta accessed the UFDR file.
Okay. And then this information, this data, is it stored at the police department?
It is, yes.
Where is it stored?
Permanently stored on a Synology in my office.
Okay. And then if someone wants to look at it, they have to go through you?
Correct, unless they can access the UFDR file that was created and put on that shared drive.
Is there any way that that information, that data that you extracted, could it be tampered with or lost or misplaced somehow?
Not the original extraction that I save in my office, but the UFDR file could be deleted if a detective wanted to delete it for some reason or move it to another folder on that drive. But they can't actually manipulate any data in the program, like switch a text message, date or time, something like that.
Did anything like that happen?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. And then you were talking about on these screen captures. Is it kind of like taking a screenshot of something where you want to capture like maybe a text message or picture or something like that?
Very similar, yes. I use that Cellebrite 4 PC program, which basically has a screen capture function built right in, which will capture the entire screen of the phone when you basically click a photograph button on the program.
Okay. And then you said something about parsing data correctly. What do you mean by that?
I just verify, like you said, the dates and times match up. If for some reason Facebook Messenger didn't parse and I need to go through and take screenshots of that, I would note that and go into that application and create those screen captures.
Okay. And so your sole role is just to extract the data, get it to the detective so they can analyze the information, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Nothing further.
Redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you, ma'am. You can step down. State's next witness.
The state calls Jenna Liberta.
Okay, if you want to step up over here then, and before you have a seat, if you could turn and face her and raise your right hand, she'll place you under oath.
You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter now before the court, so help you God.
I do.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
Jenna Liberta, Luberda.
Okay, Mr. Lizea, the witness is yours.
Good afternoon, Ms. Liberta.
Good afternoon.
Are you currently employed in law enforcement at the present time?
I am not.
And had you previously been a law enforcement officer?
I was, yes.
The decision to no longer be in law enforcement, is that a voluntary decision on your part?
It was.
Okay. And talk to me about your previous law enforcement experience.
Sure. I started as a dispatcher, actually, in 2007. In 2011, I was sworn in as a police officer at the Green Bay Police Department, where I served for 12 years.
And what roles did you have with the Green Bay Police Department?
I started as a patrol officer, was there for 7 years, and then I moved to the detective division for almost 5 years, just shy, and then I left as a lieutenant on the afternoon shift patrol.
Were you working as an investigator with the Green Bay Police Department in February of 2022?
Yes.
And as a detective with the Green Bay Police Department in February 23rd of 2022, did you assist in a homicide investigation involving the decedent, Shad Therian?
Yes.
What was your initial role in that investigation?
My initial role was to go to the place where the suspect in this case was apprehended, and there was a van involved, and basically take ownership of the van and everything that happened with the van.
And the location, is that, was that on Eastman Avenue?
Yes.
And when you arrived, did you ultimately go to that scene on Eastman Avenue?
I did.
And when you arrived, what did you observe?
I observed several other officers there. I observed the van in question, and that was pretty much it. It was pretty much just calm by the time I got there. It was just the van and other patrol officers.
Okay. And what did you do to conduct further analysis or investigation relative to that van?
I've received information that the van was involved prior to me getting there, so I knew that there may be potential evidence in the van and that we needed to secure that evidence. So I returned to the police department to write a search warrant.
Did you ultimately obtain a search warrant for the van?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know who the registered owner of the van was?
Yes.
Who was that?
Scott Thoms.
T-H-O-M-S?
Correct.
And once you got the warrant for the van, what did you do?
Once I got the warrant for the van, I returned to the Eastman address, and I called the city contracted wrecker, or towing company, and then we towed the van to our evidence storage unit on Broadway Street in the city of Green Bay.
Did either you or another member of the Green Bay Police Department follow the towing company as it brought the van to the storage facility?
Yes, myself and Detective Bray.
When you arrived at the Green Bay storage facility, what did you do?
We put the van into the secured area of the storage or the evidence unit, and we left.
And what did you return at some point in time to that van?
Yes, around 3:30 in the afternoon.
Why was there the delay between dropping the van off and then returning later?
Yeah, we knew that there were potential body parts in the van, and the forensic pathologist was currently at the home. And we wanted to wait for him to go into the van.
So then when you returned about 3:30 in the afternoon, did you have contact with the forensic pathologist?
Yes.
And what happened at that point?
At that point, our forensic unit started taking pictures and swabs of the outside of the van. And then we opened up the hatch or the back of the van. And the forensic pathologist took some items out of the van. We didn't discover anything in the back, but then we went to a box behind the driver's seat where he located body parts.
And who was taking the lead in terms of actually removing items from the van and then having contact with the human remains?
The forensic pathologist, Vincent Tranquita.
What was your role on that scene at that time?
I was observing.
And the forensic unit was present and photographing?
Yes, sorry. The forensic unit was processing the van, yes.
Once the forensic unit and the forensic pathologist had an opportunity to complete their search of the van, what did you do?
I talked with the doctor, and he told me that he believed that all...
Object. That's hearsay.
I wasn't asking specifically for what anyone told you. What did you do with the van afterwards?
So the question's withdrawn. Go ahead and ask your next question, Mr. Lizay.
The forensic unit finished processing the van and we left.
In addition to processing the van on the scene, did you subsequently have a further role with respect to this investigation?
I did.
And what was that?
I looked through one of the cell phones that was located at the Eastman Avenue address, believed to belong to Taylor's Your Business.
Now, when you say you looked through the cell phone, did you look through the device itself?
I did not.
What did you review?
Our computer forensics person who was in here just before me downloaded the phone to what's called the UDRF file, and then we're able to view the contents of the phone that way.
And is the using that type of, they call it a UFED report, is that something that you review regularly in the course of your duties as a detective with the Green Bay Police Department?
Almost every day.
So you're familiar with reviewing those reports and then locating the information that might be of interest in an investigation?
Yes.
And is that what you were asked to do with respect to a phone that was believed to belong to Taylor's Your Business?
Yes.
What sorts of things were you looking for when you reviewed the extraction of that device using the computer forensic program?
I was looking for search history on the internet. I was looking for photographs. I was looking for phone calls, text messages, messaging application chats, things of that nature.
Did you notice anything of evidentiary value?
There was some search history that I found interesting, like internet searches that I found interesting, yes.
And what was that?
There was searches, things of like...
Your Honor, I would object. relevancy. I mean, searches on the on the phone, people search, research, look at all kinds of different things. I would argue that some of these things, I believe, could be inflammatory and more prejudicial than probative.
I overrule the objection. Go ahead and answer the question, ma'am.
Things such as flaming pentagram, Jeffrey Dahmer, things like that. KKK, I believe, is one of them.
And Detective, did you note the dates and times of the respective searches that you believed were relevant?
It was around the time of the homicide.
In the days shortly before?
In the days shortly before, yes.
And do you recall when you reviewed that, did you prepare a report regarding your observations?
I did.
If you were able to review your report, might that refresh your recollection as to the specific searches and the dates and times of those searches?
It would.
Your Honor, I'm going to object to Exhibit 98. I know it's Detective Liberta's details. It's two pages. But there are dates going back to December 12th of 2022, and we're talking about an alleged incident on 2/22 or 2/23 of 2022. So I've got an issue with that. I'm also going to reserve a motion outside the presence of the jury.
Okay. Well, I think all she's been asked is to review the report, so I don't know yet what she's going to be testifying to. So I'll reserve ruling on your objection, Mr. Frelick, but I'll turn back to the state. Go ahead, Mr. Wozniak.
Your Honor, I want to say that another objection would be on grounds of relevancy. So...
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to reserve those objections.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead.
And Ms. Luberta, does reviewing that report refresh your recollection as to the nature of some of the searches that you observed on the extraction from Ms. Shabusiness's phone?
Yes.
And specifically as it relates to February 12th of 2022 and February 13th of 2022, did you note anything, was there anything noteworthy with respect to searches?
Change yes. Relevancy to that question?
Overruled. Go ahead and answer if you can.
Yes, she searched Jeffrey Dahmer. And then she searched cadaver definition, Jeff Boyer D, blow up doll customized face.
In particular, Jeffrey Dahmer, did you note that there were several searches that were related to Dahmer?
Objection, relevancy.
Overruled. Go ahead and answer.
Can you repeat your question?
Were there several searches related to Jeffrey Dahmer and other items on the device that were consistent with Jeffrey Dahmer?
Yes.
What other portions of the extraction also showed an interest in Jeffrey Dahmer?
Objection, relevancy.
Overruled.
There was a... I wrote another search warrant for her Gmail accounts, the Google accounts, a bigger search that you can do to get more information stored on the cloud. And in that extraction of that information, there were more references to Jeffrey Dahmer and searches to, for Jeffrey Dahmer, pictures, and things of that nature.
On the device itself, did you also locate photographs of Jeffrey Dahmer?
Objection, relevance.
Overruled.
Yes.
Do you know what a device screenshot is?
Yeah, yes.
What does that term generally mean?
A screenshot is where you take a shot of the screen, basically a copy of the screen.
Okay. And do you know if there were screenshots that were prepared in this case by analyst Donelski for purpose of your analysis?
Yes.
And did you review those screenshots as well?
I did.
And in reviewing those screenshots, were there also several mentions of Dahmer and Dahmer-related interest?
Yes. Objection, relevance.
Overruled.
Yes, there were.
Was this just, you know, a one-off, one or two photos, or were there several photographs?
Same objection, relevancy.
Overruled.
There were several.
Now, you mentioned that you subsequently did a search for information, a search warrant for information from Google. Can you talk about the process you utilized to do that?
Yes, so we, from the device itself, we could find out how many Gmail accounts that she had, and there was a total of five. So from those five Gmail accounts, we can write a warrant to Google for more information that's not technically stored on the phone, but in the cloud.
And did you draft such a warrant?
Yes, I did.
And ultimately, did you obtain a warrant from the court for that search?
Yes, I did.
Did Google subsequently respond to your warrant and provide information from those Gmail accounts?
Yes.
And what happened then when you received the information from Google?
I was able to, so Google provides it in a way that's hard to figure out. So analyst Donelski is able to put it into the same computer program to allow us to look at that information.
And once you then reviewed the information in the program, do you know the name of the program?
It's the same one, the UDF.
Okay, the Cellebrite, the UFED reader?
Cellebrite, yes.
Okay. When you reviewed the information in Cellebrite, were you able to find similar information regarding an interest in Jeffrey Dahmer on the Google search?
Objection, relevancy.
Overruled.
Yes.
Do you know, does Cellebrite give you the opportunity to parse out certain relevant things and generate a report that only includes certain items that are of interest to the person creating the report?
Yes.
Are you familiar with those reports from Cellebrite that allow you to do that?
Yes, I am.
Your Honor, I'm going to object to these three exhibits and the photograph. Could we argue these, please, outside the presence of the jury? I think it's crucial.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's 20 minutes to 5. I think I'm going to excuse you for the afternoon. And I'm going to ask that you be in the jury room tomorrow morning, no later than 8:30. I'm going to give you that instruction again that I've given you before. Do not communicate with anyone about this trial or your experience as a juror while you are serving on this jury. Do not use a computer, cell phone, or other electronic device with communication capabilities to share any information about this case. For example, do not communicate by blog, email, text message, Twitter, or in any other way on or off the computer. Do not permit anyone to communicate with you about this case, and if anyone does so, despite your telling them not to, you should report that to me. I appreciate that it is tempting when you go home in the evening to discuss this case with another member of your household, but you may not do so. This case must be decided by you, the jurors, based on the evidence presented in the courtroom. People not serving on this jury have not heard the evidence, and it is improper for them to influence your deliberations and decision in this case. After this trial is completed, you are free to communicate with anyone in any manner. These rules are intended to assure that the jurors remain impartial throughout the trial. If any juror has a reason to believe that another juror has violated these rules, you should report that to me. If jurors do not comply with these rules, it could result in a new trial involving additional time and significant expense to the parties and the taxpayers. With that, ladies and gentlemen, have a good evening. All rise for the jury.
You're listening to True Crime Today in the Hidden Killers podcast, continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Despiértate, que el $4 Breakfast Meal Deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un Sausage McMuffin o Sausage Biscuit, Hash Brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu Meal Deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.